Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Center for Science and Culture. The following talk is by Richard Sternberg, a biologist with the Discovery Institute. Dr. Sternberg will be discussing evidence that refutes the myth that the human genome is full of junk DNA. This lecture was recorded at a recent Science and Human Origins conference. Here's Dr. Sternberg.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to be speaking about three things. First of all, about how our DNA is organized and how it is used to produce the thousands of cell types and cell subtypes that you have in your body, and that in turn is arranged into tissues and organs, and has been so from the time of fertilization, that you were essentially a zygote, a one-celled embryo, until now, and how there are interesting commonalities, but also trenchant differences between the way we use our DNA and the way other mammals and other organisms use their DNA. In fact, my main point is going to be, it would not matter if we were indeed 100% identical to chimpanzees, because the difference that makes a difference is the way that DNA is utilized. And then finally, I'm going to conclude with some very recent results that are being widely discussed in the scientific community, but unfortunately, you have probably never heard of, because it goes right to the heart of evolutionary biology. So again, it's going to look complicated, but I will try to put it in layman's terms. Now, we all know the story. It's a story that we've been taught. It's a story I was taught. It's a story that I assumed. And it's basically this. You have Lucy, Australopithecine, somewhere in Africa. And, of course, this would have been millions of years ago, not too many millions of years ago. And then, of course, we have on the other side, we have the young Sophia Loren. And the explanation for why we have Sophia Loren and why we have Lucy is that, of course, you had tens of thousands of generations. You had mutations. You also had recombination taking place. You had natural selection that's acting as the sieve. And lo and behold, the Australopithecines become a fetching member of the species Homo sapiens. So we're familiar with this. And as a result of this common ancestry, it's asserted that a mere 1% difference exists between any chimpanzee that you would select and, if we were to take a cell of Sophia Loren, the DNA that you would find in that cell, all right? So it's on the surface, it's a very concise and, to some extent, compelling story. But it is just a story. And to understand what this narrative blurs, what it covers up, is you have to have some understanding of the principle of how the DNA in your cells is organized, how it is arranged. In one of your cells, how many meters of DNA do you have? Not a red blood cell, doesn't have any DNA. But if you were to take, say, one of your white red cells, and you were to isolate the DNA, you could, in terms of as a polymer, it's a chemical, like nylon. You've actually got inches of it, centimeters of it. It has to be folded. It has to be packed in the cell so that the DNA at the right time can be accessed, and it also can be replicated. That means copied, every cell type. Well, here is an example of a typical gene, quote-unquote, that you have on one of your chromosomes. Only a small part of it actually codes for protein, the protein that makes up, say, collagen, or the protein that makes up, say, your muscle fibers, or the protein for hemoglobin that enables you to carry oxygen into your tissues and carbon dioxide, et cetera, out of your tissues, amongst hundreds of thousands of other proteins. But what you have is you've got a number of functional modules. You've got elements that enable a gene to be switched on and off at the right time. You've got other genes, like, for example, the SNO RNA, the small nucleolar RNA. Just forget about the term, but you've got genes nested within genes. It's like a Russian doll arrangement. You've got segments that are like toggle switches that say, okay, you're going to be turned on and we're going to start reading from here and we're going to end over there. You've got virus-like elements all throughout your genes. 50% of your DNA essentially consists of viral DNA or viral-like DNA. Now, why present that busy diagram with all those functional modules? Well, it's because in order to understand the first principles of what we call gene regulation, we have to realize that all this organization enables parts of a gene to behave similar to what is called in computing theory an arithmetic logical unit. And you say, well, what in the world is that? Well, if you've got a computer with you or you've got your cell phone with you, you've got any electronic device that can do any kind of computation, the basis of it is an arithmetic logic unit. It's a processor, a microprocessor. It enables data to come in, and that data then to be, in the case of a computer, via electricity and magnetism and some other factors, in order for computation to take place. In your cells, it's different. When you have, say, a skin cell and the sun strikes it, what you have is it's receiving data. Data in terms of what? UV radiation. Data in terms of heat. It's got to respond to that. Say, for example, you've been out in the sun too long, you begin tanning, or you begin, your skin begins to burn. That is a cellular response. And it also is occurring at the DNA level. And it's occurring because all those functional modules are being organized, not in one dimensions, not in two dimensions, in three dimensions. They're being organized to form, if you will, a little microprocessor in your cells. So the first principle is that when we look at any gene, what we find is that it has a lot of data. That data is interleaved, it's interspersed, it's multi-level, and it's overlapping. It's far more sophisticated than any kind of algorithm that we have today. All right? And we've known that. We've known that since the late 1980s, early 1990s, and now it's abundantly clear. Second principle is that it's this arrangement of data that allows DNA sequences to be folded to form what is essentially an arithmetic logical unit. The third principle is that the way genes are organized along your chromosomes, or that of your dog's chromosomes, or that of your goldfish's chromosomes, is in an interesting arrangement. They're clustered into what could be considered folders. They're called domains. And what this enables is that the data that's on both strands, remember DNA is a molecule that has two strands, right? So you got one strand going in one direction, you've got another strand on the opposite side going in the other direction. And what we found is that that arrangement allows in a particular folder, if you will, think of it like a folder you have on your hard drive, say. It allows the cell to go in and to selectively retrieve data, data that is overlapping, that's interspersed, and that's interleaved. It can weave it together in different ways. The record holder, just to give you an example, the humble fruit fly that you find buzzing around your grapes or peaches has a gene. It's a gene, it's a brain protein, but from one of these folders, it produces 18,096 different proteins just by using the data in different ways, all right? And you also have genes that are like that. And this is just an example. This is what takes place in the progenitors to your red blood cells, embryos, fetuses, and then later on as the infant is born, you have different types of hemoglobin that's produced depending on the needs of the human being at a particular stage in development. And in order for that to happen, you have this folding of the DNA into these very complicated topological patterns. And that just shows you. And what that folding is what I'm calling these arithmetic logical units.
This lecture was recorded at a Science and Human Origins conference in the fall of 2014. The conference featured John West, Casey Luskin, Ann Gager, and Rick Sternberg talking about the fossil, genetic, and social issues surrounding the debate over human origins. We will be featuring these speakers on future episodes of ID the Future. For more information, please visit idthefuture.com. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2014. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.